From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Deepak Bhatt, Senior Associate Editor for ACC.org, and I'm filling in for Dr. Kim Eagle this week on his Eagle's Eye View. So it's really a privilege to be able to do that. And today we're coming to you from the European Society of Cardiology meeting in sunny Barcelona with some very exciting clinical trials that could have an impact on the way you practice medicine. So I wanted to review some of the trials that I found interesting, and I'm just going to go through them in the order in which they were presented. But before getting into the trials, I do want to talk a little bit about an observational study, the PURE study, that was done by the group up at Population Health Research Institute, Salim Youssef's group, some really interesting data about diet that's come out. And I think it's important for you all to know about this because I'm sure that the press will cover, or perhaps by the time you're hearing this, will have already covered in great detail these different analyses coming out of PURE. There were, I would say, two very important messages that came out. The first had to do with that age-old controversy of fat versus carbs. And what the PURE analysis found was that a high-carb diet was associated with an increased risk of dying versus a diet that has got fat in it. So it turned out in their analysis, carbs were way worse than fat for mortality. And I think part of the explanation for this really isn't so much that one specific part of diet is bad or one is good, but everything in moderation. And I think what has happened is a focus over the past several years in reducing fat intake. That's probably a good thing, but how most people are doing it is by increasing their carbs. And when that happens, it probably has actually hurt public health more than it's helped. So a very important analysis, though I think there'll be some controversy around it, as there always are around these observational dietary studies. Another important lesson from the PURE study had to do with fruit, vegetable, and legume intake, which was also associated with decreased mortality, which I think many people felt to be the case and prior data had shown. What the PURE investigators did, though, was quantify just how many veggies and fruits you had to get in a day, and they found that about 3 to 4 servings a day was the magic number. Above that, there in some endpoints was some additional benefit, but really it seemed like most of the bang for your buck was with 3 to 4 servings a day, which I think is achievable. Takes some work, but certainly not the 7 or 8 servings a day that other folks or guidelines have sometimes endorsed. So a really important study. With that, let me now move on to the trials. Really, there are a lot of good trials here. I'm not going to go through every single one, but instead focus on ones that I think have some potential to change practice or are going to spawn lots of other discussion or are going to be controversial or all of the above. So I'm just going to go with the order in which they were presented here. On day one of ESC, the DIVA trial was presented. This is a VA study. It's actually called VA DIVA, that randomized a little under 600 patients to receive either a bare metal stent or drug-eluting stent. You might say, why do that? Isn't that a known sort of issue that DS are better than BMS? Well, here it was in patients who've had a saphenous vein graft intervention, challenging cohort of patients even in 2017. And the primary endpoint was target vessel failure at 12 months, and there was no difference between the bare metal stent and the drug-eluting stent, so perhaps contrary to what many people would have expected. And yeah, there have been prior trials of DS versus BMS in vein grafts, but this trial actually was a blinded trial, not easy to do in device trials, and there was no mandated angiographic follow-up because, of course, mandated angiographic follow-up can inflate event rates somewhat artificially, so meant to be more real-world. And in that context, the DS actually didn't beat the BMS. No safety issue with the DS, no difference in stent thrombosis rates, which were low, but no better efficacy with the DS versus bare metal stent. So will this influence practice? You know, we'll see. I mean, bare metal stents still are significantly cheaper than DS, so one could make an economic argument in this subset to go back to BMS. But I think the more important message from VA DIVA was the very high event rates in both arms. That is almost 20% at 1 year, almost 40 to 50% at the median follow-up of 2.7 years. So very, very high event rates in patients who've had vein graft intervention. I think this means we've got to do better in vein graft intervention, but also we've got to think of adjunctive therapies to reduce the overall global risk of patients who've had bypass surgery. So that was VA DIVA. The next trial in the series that I'm going to go through was the CANTOS trial, presented by my colleague Paul Ridker. And this was a really interesting trial looking at an anti-inflammatory drug to see if it prevented cardiovascular events in a high-risk population. And the trial was positive. It significantly reduced ischemic events, non-fatal ischemic events, but still a significant reduction. And I think that validates the whole inflammation hypothesis. That is, inflammation is important in cardiovascular disease, specifically in coronary artery disease. And it's been a bit controversial because a lot of that data has come from statin trials, which in addition to lowering CRP, also lower LDL. So some have debated and said, well, maybe it's just all the LDL and the CRP is just an innocent bystander or a guilty bystander, but a bystander nonetheless. But as it turns out in CANTOS, in the absence of reductions in LDL, but large reductions in CRP, dose-dependent reductions, depending on the dose of the anti-inflammatory drug, there was a reduction in ischemic events. So I think this validates that hypothesis that inflammation is indeed centrally involved in atherothrombosis. The other interesting part of this trial was there was also less cancer mortality, in particular from lung cancer. And, you know, that needs to be validated in future studies, whether an anti-inflammatory approach really reduces cancer risk. But just that possibility, I think, will spawn lots of research. There was an increase, though, in bad infections with this anti-inflammatory approach, which I think proves another point, that across therapeutic areas, there is no free lunch. That is much like with antithrombotics, you reduce ischemic events, you increase bleeding. It seems with anti-inflammatory agents, yes, you can reduce ischemic events, but you also do increase infections, including potentially fatal ones. Next in the hit parade of clinical trials was the COMPASS trial. This was also a widely anticipated trial. A press release had already come out saying that the trial had been stopped early for, and this was the press release, not my words, overwhelming efficacy. So we found out what the trial showed. So COMPASS, just to refresh, was a large trial, 27,000 patients with stable coronary artery disease or stable peripheral artery disease, or both. And these patients were randomized to either aspirin alone, the control arm, aspirin plus very low-dose rivaroxaban, 2.5 BID, or low-dose rivaroxaban alone, that is 5 BID of rivaroxaban, without an antiplatelet. So three arms of the trial, and as it turned out, the aspirin plus very low-dose rivaroxaban was the winner. It was better than aspirin alone with a significant reduction in cardiovascular death, MI, or stroke, and for that matter, mortality was also lower in that arm of the study. The rivaroxaban alone arm didn't actually beat aspirin. There were some signals of better effect, but there was also signals of more bleeding. So overall, that arm wasn't a winner. But a clear win with respect to the combination of aspirin and very low-dose rivaroxaban. And I don't know if people remember the ATLAS II trial. That was a trial of that same dose of rivaroxaban, largely on a background of DAPT, where in an ACS population, it was also a winner, significantly reducing ischemic events and also reducing all-cause mortality. Now, that didn't translate into an FDA indication, so that dose and indication is not available in the U.S. But we'll see what happens now with the COMPASS trial, not only for that ACS part of things, but just for this chronic, stable CAD-PAD population. It's a very large population, but results that I think were quite remarkable. I think there'll be a lot of debate once the results are fully out there about what to do in these types of patients. What's the role of clopidogrel monotherapy in PAD? What's the role of extended duration dual antiplatelet therapy in patients that are stabilized in many months or years post-MI? So I think there'll be lots of discussions and symposia and that sort of thing, but really positive results. As well, presented right after the main COMPASS results was COMPASS PAD, which is COMPASS peripheral artery disease. And this was a sub-study of the overall COMPASS trial. And the results here as well were quite impressive, I thought, with significant reductions in ischemic events. But not just coronary-type ischemic events or cerebral-type ischemic events, but peripheral events, so-called MALE, major adverse limb events. I'm not sure I like that acronym, but that's the acronym that's in vogue now in PAD, MALE. So MALE was reduced with the aspirin and very low-dose rivaroxaban versus aspirin alone. So things like amputations were also significantly reduced. Thus, we've got a therapy that's reducing events that we think of as conventional major adverse cardiac events, but also reducing events in the peripheral circulation. I think this will be viewed as pretty big in the PAD world. We don't really have too many breakthroughs in the PAD world, and I think this will be viewed as one. But we'll see what you all think once the data are fully out there and digested. The next trial I'm going to mention is the Validate Sweetheart trial. So this is done in that incredible Swedish registry where they just enroll lots of patients quickly and do real-world trials, and they are churning out lots of good data from that registry. This particular study examined patients with ACS, STEMI or NSTEMI, randomized to bivalirudin or heparin to try to put to bed that age-old question now of which is the better anticoagulant for PCI. This is an important question even for non-interventionalists because ACS patients get a lot of PCI, and therefore the choice of anticoagulant matters. There's been a lot of controversy about whether bivalirudin is really better than heparin. If you don't give 2B3 inhibitors, as in the current era, very few of us do as a matter of routine anymore. In an older era where there was more widespread use of 2B3 inhibitor, there was no question that bivalirudin at least was as efficacious as heparin plus 2B3 inhibitor with a lot less bleeding. But how about if you take away the 2B3 inhibitor? Well, in a contemporary trial now, Validate has compared bivalirudin versus heparin, 90% radial approach, lots of contemporary oral ADP receptor antagonists. And in that milieu, there was no difference between heparin or bivalirudin. So hard to know exactly what to make of some of the older bivalirudin data. I believe it, but perhaps times have changed, and in the current environment, the way we do things, lots of radial use, not so much 2B3 inhibitor use, that heparin's as good as bivalirudin, certainly cheaper. But I'm sure this too will be widely debated and controversial. There's certainly other data sets that have come out that show superiority of bivalirudin over heparin, especially with respect to bleeding. That's actually been fairly consistent. So once more, topic for lots of symposia and papers and debates and that sort of thing. Good stuff all around. The next trial I'm going to mention in the series is the REDUAL PCI trial presented by my colleague Chris Cannon. And this trial, I think, is really important. It examines patients who have atrial fibrillation who are undergoing PCI. And this is a vexing problem to clinical cardiologists, to interventionalists, to everybody taking care of these folks. What antithrombotic cocktail do you send them out on? Lots of controversy, lots of strong opinions. Now, the PIONEER trial came out several months ago and suggested that a strategy of aspirin, clopidogrel, full-dose warfarin was a losing strategy, and that alternative strategies in that trial with rivaroxaban were better. What REDUAL did was examine dabigatran as one of those alternative flavors of antithrombotic cocktails. And it found that the dabigatran-based regimens, which were largely double antithrombotic therapy, beat the conventional triple therapy, that is aspirin, clopidogrel, in this case it was clopidogrel or ticagrelor, plus warfarin. So a significant reduction in bleeding by any number of different metrics with a strategy of double therapy, including dabigatran. Some interesting things as well about the dabigatran dosing that I think for people that are using the drug, especially outside the U.S., they'll be happy to see how well the lower dose did, though that dose is not actually available in the U.S. So very interesting data there. More broadly than just the dabigatran part of that story, though, is I think we now have another trial on top of PIONEER and, in fact, on top of WOST and ISAR triple as well, that broadly support the concept that triple antithrombotic therapy, full-dose aspirin, second antiplatelet, full-dose warfarin, it's just a bad strategy. It causes a ton of bleeding, including bad bleeding, with no obvious benefit in terms of efficacy. The final trial I'll just mention in the series is the much smaller study, the Spiral Hypertension Off-Med trial. This was a renal denervation trial using a particular renal denervation catheter, and compared with Simplicity 3, for example, the renal denervation here was meant to be more complete, going after anything that could be denervated, any renal artery, including down to the branches. And this more complete denervation, the hope was, would actually reduce blood pressure. If you recall in Simplicity 3, which was a sham-controlled trial of resistant hypertension, there renal denervation didn't seem to work. In some subgroups, it looked like it did, but the overall trial really was neutral. And what we see in spiral hypertension off meds is a significant reduction in blood pressure with this more aggressive approach to renal denervation, also a newer catheter that accomplishes a more circumferential ablation than the prior catheter tested in Simplicity 3. So really exciting results. Some caveats. It was a small study meant to be 100, but stopped after an interim analysis of 80 patients. So really small sample size to begin with, stopped early. So need to be a little bit cautious there as well, of course. But still, a statistically significant reduction in blood pressure in a sham-controlled renal denervation trial. So I think that's very exciting. This, too, I think will provoke a lot of controversy. Some will question the magnitude of blood pressure reduction in this population of patients who are off antihypertensive medications. But nonetheless, I think it's an important proof of concept that with this catheter, with aggressive renal denervation by expert operators, you know, there is a modest, though statistically significant, reduction in blood pressure. But I would say we still have a lot to learn about renal denervation before it's ready for prime time. And in fact, my hope is that this small pilot study will spawn a much larger trial that really tries to nail down in a sham-controlled fashion whether renal denervation provides a clinically worthwhile benefit for our patients. Well, with that, let me wrap things up. Thanks so much for listening to Eagle's Eye View. I'm happy to be playing the role of Dr. Eagle this week. He'll resume next week. It's been fun getting a chance to give all of you my impressions of this very exciting ESC. Go online to American College of Cardiology's website, and you can find older podcasts there as well. So if you thought this was good, I think Dr. Eagle is even better. So go ahead to the website and tune in. Thank you so much for your attention.